Just so you know, new Zoom routines. So, good evening, everyone. And nice to see you on Memorial Day. Here in Colorado Springs, we had rain most of the day. So it felt like a soaking day here. And a kind of musing day. And since we are a small number this evening, it's kind of perfect for conversation. So I'm going to try to limit my comments so that we can really have a spacious evening for conversation. There's a at the end, if it still seems right and there's time, I'll read a poem from Walt Whitman that got posted today and that I found really beautiful and touching on what we do and why we do it. Walt Whitman spent a lot of time in war hospitals during the Civil War. A lot of time that he said was, it was just comforting people. He was just there being with people and being it sounded like it was just being the presence of somebody who cared about what was happening to those people lying injured in those horrible Civil War hospitals. And his poetry, so much of his poetry is a celebration of what it is to be alive as a human being, fully embodied in this world of wonders and horrors. And so it was particularly striking to me that the way that sensibility lies underneath so much of our practice. You know, when in Zen, there's so much mention of the great matter of life and death. And it's easy to sort of weigh that on the death side and think, oh yeah, you know, this has got to be about suffering and death. And it does. And about the life that we live right there in the midst of including suffering and death. And so looking back at the May talks, I was seeing that, you know, on the first we talked about refuge and vows. And I raised that question about how our vows meet the moment that we are in. How we can greet the light that comes through us, the light that comes through everything all the time, and find comfort and challenge there, both. in the words of the ancestors and in the questions of our own hearts, the dilemmas of being alive. And as we looked at open source Koan Zen, we've talked a little bit about the particular flavor of this tradition. And so our particular Dharma, you know, where it comes from, what's our house style, why do we do what we do? And so today, I want to I wrote in the newsletter about tending, this sense of tending life. There's such a burgeoning of life, allowing life to enliven us deeply, so deeply, that out of that comes the energy of healing and collaboration naturally. What is that kind of deep refuge, deep enlivening refuge in the great matter that allows healing and collaboration, the creativity of that to come forth in us and from us as a natural kind of serving life itself in us and in others. So we'll be continuing sort of another part of the conversation on June 14th. The four of us open source teachers will be here and launch more conversations specifically about the Koan way, but we'll be touching on it this evening too, about how it meets our vows and our precepts. So folding back to vows, the ones we have and how we work with them. So still in this line of conversation about what are the particular characteristics of our way, but then to just open, and I'm just wanting to hear what questions are coming up for you guys and what you're noticing in your lives about practice and the particulars for you. So three points came up for me in particular. One is that in our tradition, we take our vows, I vow to take refuge in awakening is really how that first part goes. When we say I take refuge, that's a commitment, that I commit myself to taking refuge in awakening, to finding my home there. And so that it is so deep, the my awareness of awakening being the fundamental nature of everything in me is so deep in me that that's where I find my home when I know it and even when I don't know it. That's home base. That is not a fixed place to stand. It's not a set of views and principles, but it is so organic to what I've discovered about life that it's what I come home to. I come home to awakening, the being the nature of everything. I come home to the way things are, to noticing that, to wondering about that, to letting that be the touchstone against which everything gets touched. I come home to my companions, realizing that all of the companions from you and you and you to my self-companion, to the birds on the deck companion, the floor under my feet companion, the words of the ancestors companion, that when I inquire into what's helpful, into what helps me be of service, what helps me be at ease with the flow of this life? My companions. And so I vow to come home to that understanding when I feel like I'm getting lost. So kind of like that. So those three refuges are recited all over the world and have been from the origins of Buddhism. And the pure vows, I vow not to do harm. I vow to do good. I vow to do good for others. I vow to extend goodness into the world. Those three have been recited by Buddhists around the world for a very long time. They are just core to the tradition in which we're practicing. And then the more recent ones, the expressions, well, the first five of our 10 grave precepts are also that old. I vow not to kill. I vow not to steal. I vow not to misuse sex. I vow not to lie. I vow not to misuse substances. Those five are pretty much in any Buddhist tradition you're going to find in any language. And then from there, there's this interesting further development and elaboration that evolved in response to circumstances, because these vows are not only an expression of how things fundamentally are, but also an expression of what works among us humans. You know, what keeps us from throttling each other and uncontrolled consumption and destruction. What keeps us enlivening each other, making whole the life that we share, those became more situation specific. And so you got things like the rules, the Vinaya, the rules of living together that included things that we reject now. Assumptions that women were dirty and to be avoided. Assumptions that, like there were, the one that always gets me is the rule not to give the Dharma to someone holding an umbrella. Well, that was a pretty culture-specific vow that had to do with caste, I think, had to do with who would you be holding an umbrella for? And would you be corrupted by wealth? But to us, it's just meaningless. Yeah. Why would you not give the Dharma to somebody holding an umbrella? So, but not only the specific language of the precepts, the specific rules, but also the way that they are held has changed over time and from one culture to another, so that in some communities, you'll find those being held as rules that you in the community are expected to demonstrate you are upholding and challenge each other when you're not upholding and hold yourself to in a do and don't sense. I did or I didn't, you know, I did good or I did bad. And I repent and I will do better. And then in some communities, you'll find that sort of relationship to the precepts completely being rejected. So that it's just your individual life and you individually will figure it out. You'll find your own relationship to each of those precepts. And I really think that we don't fall into either of those camps. And that what we do, what's the particular flavor of the way that we hold these vows and these precepts is that we take them as inquiry. Well, three things. One, we take them as an expression of our core Buddha nature. Our own bodhisattva nature, that these vows and these precepts are an expression of our desire to awaken with and for everybody. So to awaken together and to support each other's awakening. So my desire to be a part of that. That these vows are an expression of that. What does that look like on the ground? And as a link to that, that can be explored and challenged and strengthened and embedded in us like a cord wrapped around a tree that the tree just grows around so that the cord ends up embedded in the tree. They become embedded in us, invisible and indelible, but not as rules so much. So they show up as service and inquiry. What wants to be enjoyed? What needs to be attended to? And when we take them up in particular as inquiry, they show up on their own pretty soon. And one of us spoke about that last Saturday about how, and they start to talk to each other. So about the way that the vow not to kill and the vow not to pick apart the faults of others, how those two talk to each other. And so, you know, so that you end up with a deep internal conversation that doesn't get resolved. It's like, well, what about this? And if I try to apply that rule to other people, then what does that do to me? And if I hold it in my heart and try to judge myself by it, what does that do to me? And how do I hold the precept without falling into judgment? They start to talk to each other that way. And then also we take up the question, what's the not to of this? And that's a particular characteristic of our specific tradition, that we look at it in terms of how does this invite me to face the world and move crosswise? If I find myself thinking in terms of either or, right? Either I'm a killer or I am impossibly pure and there's no other alternative, then we find ourselves looking for what's a third possibility that includes both of those and that really supports my being alive in this world with joy and strength and humility. And so the third thing I notice about the way that we work with them individually and in community is that they become sort of a part of the shape of the riverbed of our life. Megan was talking on last Thursday night about mental formations, the things that shape us. Our culture, our family history, our ancestry, so many factors that sort of shape what we end up calling our personality, the characteristics of our individual person, that can be seen as confining, but can also be seen as the very stuff, the very characteristic of our individual awakening. These precepts become part of that riverbed for us, part of the shape of who we are, so that so that our particular awakening and our awakenings, our openings, are not so much limited by all of the stuff of our lives and our likes and our dislikes and our strengths and our failings and our cultural assumptions, but with these companions, with these vows as companions, there's a kind of magic that happens so that all of the stuff of our lives becomes the body of our awakening. I don't know if that's making any sense. I hope so. And I think that is all I have to say about that right now. We can also talk about the sort of specifics of how we do it. You already know, I think, that we recite our precepts in community once a month together and have a kind of shared inquiry around them. We also take them up individually. But I think I'd like to stop talking now and just open the floor for us to have some conversation that can be about this part of what I've just been talking about, or about any of what we've been talking about, or just what's up for you about any questions like, why do we do it this way and not the way that other community I've been in does it, or just anything you're wondering about. And you can just unmute yourself and speak, and we'll stop recording.